You are now entering the world of Musings of a Geek Podcast Network. Stay geeky, my friends.
Hello, and welcome to the Movie Roast number 35. I am your host, Scott. You can find me on Twitter at xorsonx. And I am here with Brian, you can find on Twitter at Pure Rock Fury. And we are here with Matt, who you can find at the local Super K.
Sweatpantsfever at gmail.com.
Thank you. So this is, number 35. And this is, we're presenting you with a review of Kiss Me Deadly, the 1955 Criterion selection. A doomed female hitchhiker pulls Mike Hammer into a deadly whirlpool of intrigue revolving around the mysterious Great What's It? Transmitter circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now?
And that's weird. Justin failed to mention this is our special Thanksgiving episode, meaning there'll only be one movie roast this week.
Yes, that too. Well, I mentioned it last week, and since everyone who listens not only listen every week, but they tell all their friends and they keep everyone up to date.
And they cried knowing they're gonna have to wait a whole week for two more.
Who knows? Maybe I'll just hop on and do a little special hello on Friday.
Tune in next week for your chance at a new car.
Dun, 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 dun.
You all get a CD Walkman with bass boost.
That was weird.
A little Gary Gulman for him.
So, for those of you who may have missed the last few, this month's theme has been movies we should have seen by now. And this was Brian's pick. So
that
I
was actually not my pick. It's
this
my
was
movie.
Not your pick? Whose pick
it was
it?
Matt's
I said we had to watch this movie because
okay.
It's awesome.
Well, then why don't you tell us why, and why don't you tell us what it's about?
Me? Okay. Well, why? Why is it awesome?
This guy never announces the director, writer, or actors anymore. Just saying.
I never always did. It was directed by Robert Aldrich. Aldrich.
Wow.
Written by Mikey Spillane.
Mickey Spillane. Jesus, you're brutalizing this.
Now you know why I don't do it.
All right, here's the thing. Mike Hammer, that's what this movie is about. Awesome detective, 1950s, womanizer,
private
smooth,
detective, by the way.
Private detective, thank you. There is a difference. It's not a cop movie, per se. But it's always interesting that because the PIs always kind of fly under the radar and what's legal. And if you read the books, they're always, fixing and putting guys' fingerprints on guns and leaving stuff pre-DNA. The world was so different pre-DNA.
Basically the precursor to Dog the Bounty Hunter.
Pretty much.
Yeah, that was a total bomb.
Actually, it's completely different, but yeah. Anyway, Mike Hammer kicks ass.
And takes names.
There you have it. Actually, he did. When that guy was following him in the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
And it was one of the funniest yet awesome fight scenes I've ever seen in my life. Because he's slamming a guy's head against the wall, and the guy falls to the ground. As soon as he turns around and starts walking away, he gets up and starts chasing him again. It's like
the popcorn in the face. The guy's following him. He's awesome. Like, hey, I guess I'll stop by this popcorn stand and get some popcorn, see?
Right.
He sees the guy behind him, and and I'm the one who yelled, and I didn't even remember. I'm like, he's going to throw a popcorn in the face.
I remember
he totally
that.
Did, and the guy's like, what?
It's just like in the Superman when they throw the gun. Like, he's standing there with the bullets all tough, and they throw the gun, and he dodges it.
Or rather, the Naked Gun movie where they throw the pillow at Leslie Nielsen, and he wrestles with it for like 10 minutes. Like, squid on the face. My favorite part of that particular scene, though, is when he got to the cigarette machine. And he looks at the reflection, and the guy is so clearly in the shot. Like, he's looking at the reflection and sees the guy there. And the guy is not that far away, so he probably can see the fact that he's being seen. And he doesn't even try to move out of the way. He's just standing there, and he, looks off to the side, like,
yeah, he's literally, 5 feet behind him.
Oh, I'm just, reading a newspaper, having a smoke against the side of this building.
He does a thing where he fans
I'm
out
not
the paper.
Tailing you, Mike Hammer.
He does a thing where he fans out the fake newspaper that's not in his hands.
So just a little quick rundown. I mean, it opens up. Mike Hammer's driving down the street, and there's a lady waving down cars or whatever, wearing nothing but a trench coat. He picks her up, and you know, the whoever is after her.
There's a roadblock.
Yeah, there's a roadblock looking for her because she's an escaped mental patient, and I totally just did air quotes for those listening. And, you know, the people who lock her up, they eventually find her, and then, you know, her and Mike Hammer are held captive, and then he spends the rest of the movie after he escapes trying to figure out why they ended up killing her and blah, 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 and he talks to... was her roommate. He talks to
her old landlord.
Yeah. The guy who moved the roommate out because the roommate was starting to get worried. You know, it's just basically he just spends the movie trying to piece together what happened to this woman he picked up on the side of the road.
Why was she so in demand and they wanted to kill her? What were they trying to hide?
Not to mention he was also looking for the opportunity to get out of doing his ticky-tack divorce cases, or what do they refer to them as?
I don't remember.
They refer to them as a bedroom dick, which is different than a house dick. A bedroom dick... oh, boy. A bedroom dick is like a divorce guy, or he catches people cheating.
Well, yeah.
Where a house dick is basically like a hotel security guy.
So does anyone remember the episode of The Simpsons where there was some mysterious intrigue surrounding Lisa Simpson, and Homer hired a private eye? And he said he'd been operating under the hypothesis that Lisa was actually a werewolf.
Yes.
What kind of dick would he be? A werewolf dick?
A monster? Just a real dick.
A monster dick?
Just a regular dick.
Yeah.
But yeah, when I did security, I referred to myself as a house dick.
Yeah, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't they mention the fact that basically what they did is his secretary would go and seduce the guys.
Nope.
And then he would take pictures back to the wife, and then he would seduce the wife, and the secretary would take pictures of them, and then they would cause these divorce cases. And
working against each other.
How did these people not realize that the people working your divorce case are now the two people that you were cheating on with?
I'm sure it didn't work every time, but yeah, it's just a scam, I guess.
Look at these pictures, see?
Yeah, your wife, she likes my camera, see?
I don't think there was a plot element that was very well thought out, maybe. He's like, yeah, just get the guy to do the thing, and then she'll do the same thing, and then we'll just we don't have to talk about it. We'll just ignore it and move on.
All right, so, Brian, what did you like about this movie?
I liked a lot of things about this movie.
Okay,
first
Matt,
of all,
I
don't care.
I was just being funny. I liked a lot.
Oh, the tracking shots were great.
They were cool shots, yeah.
Like I said before, a lot of the old movies, they can be off-putting. Now, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but it can be off-putting to watch because it seemed like a lot of times they build a set and they would just film in that scene and then they would just move to another scene. They didn't do a lot of camera movement, maybe just like side to side or up and down, but like we were saying with Citizen Kane, was like the first movie where the camera had like this dynamic kind of moving around the scene and it would capture things from different angles, and like this kind of had the same feel to it. And then just the camera points of view I thought were really, it seemed like every time Mike Hammer was talking to a suspect or interviewing somebody who might have information, they always put the camera like up above, kind of like in a perched area where it's really dark, almost like it gave you the perspective of somebody's like listening in. Somebody's like, what's going on?
Voyeuristic kind of angle. Yeah, sure.
That was awesome. And like, I don't think I've ever seen a lot of stuff like that in movies from that era. So
they used the architecture really well too.
Yeah. All the staircases and all the weird shadows and
some really awesome shots with that one big staircase going down. Yeah.
But there were a couple of scenes like that where he's, you know, doing the whole, what do you know? See? And then up the camera's like in the, it's like above, like maybe a floor above or up in this crevice, like in the like doorway, I guess. I don't know. Just the way they did it made it feel like there might be someone listening in going like, what are they talking about? Or it gave you the feeling that somebody was following Mike Hammer as he's following people looking for information.
And in fact, everyone was following Mike Hammer.
Yeah. And looking for popcorn to be thrown at him.
Right. Right, Sugar Smallhouse, he was looking for him.
But like this next one kind of like works in concert with that is the whole use of it seemed like every time there was any sort of lighting of any kind, there was always that real sharp silhouette of him standing against the wall. It just reminded me of Alfred Hitchcock and just all the use of like different shadows and such.
And I think they paid more attention to that stuff back in the black and white days because you didn't have a lot of, you know, color to rely on a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah. You had less to work with, sure.
Yeah.
Matt's already said it a couple times. Sugar Smallhouse, that might be the greatest villain character of all time.
You don't want to mess with Sugar Smallhouse, see?
Yeah, and you see the guy, you're like, that's him? He looks like Ted, the guy who sells chairs at Lazy Boy.
Wait, now, was that the old guy or was that the cross-eyed guy?
The guy that got knocked out in the like bathhouse.
The old guy,
like
yeah. The
John Malkovich looking dude.
Yeah.
And then just all the one-liners. They were firing them off left and right. You know, when they're driving the car, your father's mustache.
It's like, why'd you get a new car? What happened to the old one? Hey, I got rid of it. The ashtrays were all full.
Is that what he said? Yeah. What did he say to the girl, the lady in the beginning when he picked her up? I should have just threw you off that cliff back there.
I still might.
You always run around with no clothes on?
Yeah. There was some pretty awesome.
Just a lot of like sharp one-liners. This movie was pretty loaded with them. So just stuff like there was never any like great grand thematic thing that made this movie awesome. It was just a lot of little things that none of them was particularly unexpected, but more just, you know, you had a certain expectation going in and it kind of delivered on those fronts. So, I mean, that was pretty much, I feel like I got what I wanted out of this movie. Like I didn't have any expectations where I was like, well, it didn't even come close, or I don't even know what it was trying to do. Like I knew what I was looking for, I knew what I was buying, and I got what I wanted. So I was totally satisfied on all those points.
Yeah, when you had said that you had bought it, I'm like, God, this, I know this movie, and I did some research. I knew exactly what movie it was, and when I was unemployed, I would just watch movies, and I would watch like 5 movies a day. And it was just one of those that stuck out where I'm like, that one was amazing. And anyway, that's why I was like, we got to watch that one.
Oh, and also just throw in there, like the fact that every woman he came in contact with just felt the need to make. Oh, sorry.
Well, I mean, it's fine, but it was pretty awesome that literally every time he encountered a female, they were making out. They were kissing. Whether he knew him or not, like when he showed up. At like the gangster's house.
Oh yeah,
the gangster's house. He's like, "Oh no, I'm his sister. Oh, you want to go?" And the next thing you know, they're in the other room.
Why don't you invite me inside, baby?
Yeah, right. I thought that was pretty amazing.
Yeah, there was a lot of like
pretty smooth,
kind of hilarious innuendo. What do you got in the oven? I don't know. What do you want to be in the oven? It's like, oh my god.
Yeah.
Just stuff. All those like cheesy innuendo lines that were thrown all over the place when he would encounter these random. It was almost as if they did Mike Hammer 2. They'd have to be like, oh, yeah, I was walking through the store and I said, hey, which way to the, you know, how do I get a donut in this place? And then she just starts making out with him.
Right, yeah.
Just call it Make Out City.
Did you speak your piece on what you liked about it? Or
there's so many things that I like about this movie, and I agree with you guys basically on your points. And the best thing, though, that stood out for me, and I don't want to ruin the ending, but the what's it, okay? What is it? In these detective movies, it's pretty common that, what, they're looking for diamonds or gold.
Or some kind
of... But just the fact pictures. What it was, yeah, some kind of money scam.
Yeah, evidence.
And clearly, like, what they were looking for, and, like, Mike Hammer's greed kind of got to him, and he was lucky that he just didn't open the box, but he was smart enough.
What's in the box?
Why is it hot? But that was my favorite part, because sometimes with these endings, you know, it's, you know, it cleans up and, oh, he saves the girl or whatever. And you know what I mean? It's usually very kind of predictable, where this ending really stood out. Like when I watched like 20 of these film noir movies, it was just that ending really got me. And that was probably my favorite thing about it, but I like so many things. I, know.
Yeah, I think we pretty much touched on most of it, so we can.
Obviously, the Criterion, the print on it was amazing. Just the range of shades. Yeah. I was in black and white, so.
Yeah, yeah. We'll bring this right into the what we didn't like, and this will also segue, at least for me, right into what I would have done differently. And this is might sound silly, but I didn't really have a lot of expectations going in, but I did have one major expectation that wasn't even touched on, and it was the way they spoke. Like I was expecting you're going to tell me what I want to know, see?
Right.
And there was none of that. Everybody was so normal in this movie.
Well, it was Los Angeles, correct? I mean, I think that kind of, it was more like 50s New York or Chicago.
I don't care.
But
I was expecting the Bugs Bunny. It's Clayton's for you.
Well, they were saying in the documentary in the DVD that all the Mike Hammer books are set in New York. But they had made a couple of like movies in the past and they didn't really work. And they hired one guy who was the terrible Mike Hammer. Like no one bought him as a tough guy, private eye. So they moved it to L.A. And that was going to be one of the other things I liked. I liked the fact that they included a kind of seedy hotel with flamingos. Because I feel like every noir story set in L.A. should have some kind of hotel with like a flamingo theme. Because I don't know why flamingos kind of indicate 1950s dirtbag motels.
I think it more would resonate in like a Miami type of area. Though.
Sure. Oh, now, yeah. But I'm talking
about... I mean back then too. But whatever. I mean, that's fine. It's your deal.
There was the creepy hotel actually on Archer called the Pink Flamingo.
I remember that.
When I used to live over there.
Oh, that thing's the Pink Palace. That's still there.
Is it still there?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
That place is still rocking with docking.
Oh, Lord.
But, I mean, generally, that's about the only thing I didn't... and it's not that it ruined the movie. It was just kind of a little bit of a downer. And that's what I would have done differently.
I would have thought that more like, listen here, see? It was more like 30s noir.
Hey.
Am I wrong?
Quit trying to ruin my dreams.
Like
because Humphrey the entire Bolt. Movie, all three of us were sitting there just waiting for it and saying it.
Oh, I know, but I mean, it didn't disappoint me that I didn't get it.
I'm going to go get some more coffee, see?
Wasn't that more of like a Humphrey Bogart?
Take some of his popcorn, see?
Yeah, Jimmy Cagney, Bogart.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking that was like first wave noir. Hey, there you go.
That was like pre-World War II.
My movie. Damn it. Just at least one cheesy character like that would have made my day.
What are you talking about? There was a ton of it in this movie.
And I will admit that when he knocked out what's his neck in the pool like house, that was bad.
That was awesome.
That was terrible. The camera was behind my camera about knee height. So you see the guy walking up and then all you see is four legs and you hear pow and the guy falls over. You have no idea what happens. No idea whatsoever.
It felt like it was more of a piff.
Whatever. It was more like a biff or a whiff.
The only thing about this movie that I don't really want to say I didn't like, but I was kind of like starting to get a little bit, not annoyed by, but just a little disappointed by towards the end, was it felt like the entire bulk of the movie was him going from one scene to the next just looking for clues. There was nothing else.
Kind of what detectives do.
I get that, but I've seen enough. I've seen other movies like this where there's some kind of other character development of some kind. I'm not saying we needed to know this guy's like childhood life story or anything, but everything was like, what do you know? See? All right. What do you know? I don't know anything. You sure? All right. I'll be back later. And he goes to the next.
Give me an address.
Yeah. He goes to the next place.
But I don't know nothing.
I'm here to do it. I'm here to see so-and-so. He's over there. Hey, I need this thing. All right. I'm going to go over there now. It was just like one long path of him going from place to place.
And then back to other places again.
Yeah.
Well, in all fairness, he didn't know what he was looking for. And I mean, for the most part, why?
True.
Yeah, Brian. Know,
see?
He was pretty much just kind of grasping whatever.
And would it have killed him to have a guy with a mustache?
Yeah. There weren't too many mustaches. Maybe it was out of fashion in that time.
I don't remember there being one. But I do remember that awesome... absolutely awesome answering machine.
The answering machine was amazing.
It was like 2 feet by 3 feet, reel to reel answering machine.
In the wall.
It was amazing.
That was pretty amazing, actually.
I kind of want one of those, like, even though I don't need one.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'd find a way to hook it up, like, with my Android.
Right. I would have liked a little more action, because any of the action was hilarious, other than the one you described in the pool where he knocks out Sugar Smallhouse.
Right.
I think the action was hilarious, and there was also really no gunfights. Like, if I'm correct, I don't think he ever pulled his gun or shot it, did he? I mean, I know in the beginning the cop actually, oh, I'm revoking your PI license and you can't run around with a gun, so maybe that was why.
Right.
But I would like to have seen more knuckle sandwiches getting tossed around, because that was pretty amazing.
There's no PI on the planet that only has one gun.
You chucked that guy down the stairs. That was awesome.
Like, yes, that was
four great, flights of stairs.
Like, and he just kept going, didn't even try to stop himself. He's just going down the stairs.
So that's what I would say. Stairs. And I still think that even though the ending was awesome, I think they could have wrapped it up a little better.
Like, yeah, I can see where you're coming from.
And remember what you had said about the other ending? I looked that up. And apparently the alternate ending was they made it seem like Hammer and the secretary died.
Oh, okay.
And in the other one, it had him just in the one that we saw. They kind of walk away, you know. But I guess the alternate ending, they left it like, did they die? We don't know. Like, they just kind of stopped.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
Tune in next week for Mike Hammer 2, Beach on Fire. Yeah, there needed to be more knuckle sandwiches for sure.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would have been nice, but I mean, it didn't really take away anything from me, at least.
No.
He was slapping people around.
The guy at the health club. I forgot about that.
You were dying. And he did it a few times.
Yeah, he literally spent the last, like, 20 minutes.
With the coroner guy.
Just paintbrushing people.
The best one was at the health club where he, like, completely whiffed the first slap. And they did the sound effect, so it sounded like he slapped him super hard. But yeah, that was his weapon of choice, was the slap.
And the coroner guy.
Please, Mr. Hammer, don't slap me again.
Some nerdy coroner guys trying to work him for money.
I got no information for you, Hammer. Smack, smack. Okay, I'll tell you whatever. Don't slap me anymore.
It would have been great if he like pulled up somewhere and got out of the car and there were two guys going like, hey, that's that Mike Hammer guy. Stay away from me. He likes to slap people.
So, I mean, do we have anything other than what we've already mentioned that we would have done differently?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, by all means, because outside of adding some... a little more of the violence, a little more, you know, I'm pretty much good with it.
More making out with the blonde at the pool house specifically.
Yeah.
But more making out.
She was probably like, I mean,
he made out with every woman.
The secretary was really cute, but she wasn't like super knockout like Lauren Bacall good looking.
I mean, he was like the original.
That would be, I guess, my complaint is that the females could have been a little more attractive.
Yeah, the women.
I mean, the secretary, she was cute. I mean, don't get me wrong. But the other one, and then Cloris Leachman really didn't do it for me in the beginning.
No.
And then the blonde who double-crossed him with the short hair.
She was terrible.
She was just kind of bad.
She was so stiff. I forgot about her.
She was really bad. Like, at the end, she's like, kiss me, Mike. Do it. And it's like, wow, you're threatening beyond measure. Oh, my God. Merger. No, she was awful.
Yeah, I forgot about her.
But yeah, I don't know. I felt like more making out would have been pretty good. There was that part where his secretary was literally throwing herself at him, and he's all just like, every time she like
things to do, see?
Yeah, anytime she put even like a hand in his...
check my machine.
Anytime she put like a hand in his line of sight, he'd just like slowly push it away. It's like, she's trying to throw herself at you, and you're...
He's Mike Hammer. He doesn't care. Women throw themselves at him all the time. And they need her stuff.
That was kind of my next thing was I think Mike Hammer could have been a little more grizzled and had a hilarious drinking problem or something.
Yeah, you figure that's – I mean, that's like the PI cliche where they all keep the booze in their desk and they all get
He didn't smoke. He didn't really – he drank one
– smoked.
He bought cigarettes. I mean, I'm sure he smoked in the movie.
I don't recall.
He had a popcorn habit.
Yeah.
I just wanted to see like a 5 o'clock shadow and like, you know, his tie all mussed up and he comes out in some couple of the mugs, catch him outside of O'Leary's and he lays
him out.
Although
when he got really drunk at the jazz club.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. He was pretty frazzled after that.
But I'm just saying,
they took your girl. And it's like, he's like all drunk. All right, I'm going to go stumble outside, get in my car.
I'm just saying that I felt like the movie needed a scene where he stumbles out of O'Leary's. He's got the 5 o'clock shadow. A couple of guys pull a knife on him, go, give me your wallet, mister. And he lays him out. But after he knocks the second guy out, he's got to like hunch over the mailbox and get a breather in before he gets in the car, drives away all wild and almost hits an old lady carrying her groceries.
Yeah.
Not to the point where he like hits her, but just where she's like, oh my God, watch it, you brute. And he's like, shut up, you old bag. Drives away with a white wall tires. And then, like Matt said, needed guns. Where were the guns?
Because there were private eyes, police, and this mobsters movie, doesn't mean there should be.
This movie was tailor made for guns, and there were no guns.
I agree. It's probably because it was made in such a time.
No, because there's plenty of guns back then.
Go watch Stanley Kubrick's The Killing, right? Right around the same time. There are guns galore in that movie.
Yeah.
Everyone's got a gun.
Nah.
Even the horses have guns in that movie.
Nah,
and then the doctor villain, when they finally revealed him, I'm like, he looks like Captain Kangaroo. That's not the right guy to be the guy. You need the guy. The guy with the glass, like the Nazi glasses that are like goggles, dude, and he's got the weird mustache.
Like the guy from like the first Captain America?
Yeah, well, I mean, like, the whole movie,
Toby Jones. Yes.
The whole movie, you see this guy from the knees down. He's got the cool pants with the pinstripes, and he's got the awesome shoes.
Yeah.
And he's got that kind of mysterious voice, and you're like, this guy's going to be the best. And they reveal him. He's got the weird mustache. And you're like, oh, dude, he looks like Dom DeLuise in a vest.
And
this
he killed
sucks.
The mechanic. Va-va-voom!
Yeah, how can you kill that guy? He was the best.
So, yeah, you need a better villain than that guy. He was just awful.
Yeah, I think the way they settled on the villains was kind of crappy. Like I said, the one female with the short hair, and then the doctor was kind of. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, could have been a little better.
And more guns. Or guns.
Or a gun.
And the other guy with the
cool knife fight would have been pretty badass. They really didn't.
The cool like higher up police commissioner type guy with the slick hair. He was awesome. That guy needed to be around more often.
All right, so
that guy was pretty good.
What was your most memorable or unintentionally hilarious pulp cliche? I think I know where Brian's going with this, seeing as how he worded that question, but go ahead.
The line where he's in the gym with the boxing coach, or however you refer to these guys as, the Burgess Meredith from Rocky guy. And he says the thing, you'd sell a gold out of your mother's teeth.
The manager.
Aside from the fact that that's super hilarious of a line, totally racist, too.
I thought you were going to go with, like, the boom mic.
Because all I kept thinking was, like, what is this, Mom, Flavor Flav? Gold teeth? That's super racist. Hilarious because it's 1950, but still, like, it's kind of racist. I don't think it was meant to be that way. I just thought it was funny.
What about you?
I just said racism is hilarious.
I'm going to agree.
I should stop right now.
The unintentional use of ethnic immigrants in hilarious manners, like the mechanic who was just the best. It's like, you're like, what is this? He's like Greek. And you're like,
seemed like it.
Bah, bah, boom! And he's like all excited. And I'm like, dude, I want to hang out with this guy. Like, yeah.
He was super excited about everything. Like, the guy could walk in
Mikey!
And go, hey, I brought you a tuna sandwich. He rips his shirt open to expose his chest there. Oh my God! Bah, bah, boom!
And he had a badass mustache, so there's your mustache.
I guess that's true.
He did.
But and then when he was investigating the one lady and then the mover guy, that guy was cool. He was like immigrant.
The guy with the trunk strapped to his back.
Yeah,
with
that guy was cool.
Strapped to his head.
Right.
I forgot about him. Oh my God.
I almost would have to go with like, you know, the totally replaceable goons that follow him around the whole movie, you know? Like the guy with the popcorn or the guy, you know, whatever.
I mean, the guy looked like Adam Carolla.
Yeah, sure.
But not as cool. The other guy looks like he should be, I don't know, selling Lazy Boys over at the Lazy Boy refinery.
You know, that whole pool sequence, just like, you know, sitting there with the phone outside, you know, making bets and placing stuff and doing things. It's like, but at the same time, they're like dressed terribly. It's like, I mean, at least have on like a pair of slacks and a wife beater, but you guys are just sitting around in like the old, and I don't even mean 50s, I mean like the 1920s, like bathing suits. Like, come on, you look ridiculous.
I mean, the striped onesies.
Yeah, I mean, they might as well have had those on.
And the caps that cover everything.
All right, so is there anything else you guys want to mention here, or should we number it and move?
All right, put a number on it.
All right.
Well, you have the list. I mean, do you want to do that or no?
We usually do that afterwards.
At the end? All right.
I'm going to give it an 8. I was pretty entertained throughout. I mean, it was it felt a little bit longer than 93 minutes at times, but it was entertaining enough throughout to where I was like, yeah, I definitely would watch this again, and I definitely enjoyed it. Definitely made me want to check out some of Mickey Spillane's books.
See, Seventh Seal felt long to me. This one didn't really feel – it felt good.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, I agree. I give it an 8. I mean, it's solid. I mean, it's hard to go too much higher or lower on that.
Well, I hate to disappoint, but I'm going lower. I'm going 7.5 for the lack of I was hoping.
I actually thought you were going to go lower than that.
That's because you don't like me. You think I'm a jerk.
I don't know where you got that from.
Your face.
My face.
Alrighty. So crime films or TV shows similar to this, told from the perspective of, you know, good guy, cops, anti-hero type of person. What three movies or TV shows told from this perspective would we recommend to most people? I'm not sure if it falls into it, but it's definitely like a police type show. And as far as on TV, it's probably one of the best, if not the best, but I have to go Justified.
Yeah, I would say that counts, the U.S. Marshals Service.
Sure,
yeah.
And it's got all pulpy kind of stuff going on.
Yeah, it's
great villains. And
yeah.
Elmore Leonard was pretty
cool
much.
Cool lines, yeah.
Elmore Leonard pretty much was a Pulp Fiction author.
Yeah, he's like a post-noir or whatever you'd call it, sure.
And not to mention the fact that, I mean, Raylan Givens wasn't your typical by-the-book cop at all.
Oh, yeah,
he's always,
not at all, yeah.
You know, he was
kind
always...
of winging it like an old house dick.
I want to be a house dick.
He was the shack dick.
No, that's actually a good pick. Yeah, I wouldn't have thought of that. Yeah.
And you really need to watch that last season.
It's on the Netflix now.
Is it?
Ooh, is it?
I got to catch up on that.
It has been for a while, actually.
Oh, my God.
I think I missed the last two.
Seasons?
Yeah.
Ouch.
Oh, my. The fifth season was good, but
whatever
not...
were they running around and they were, like, stuck in the school and he had some prisoner. I know there was at least one season after
that. I think you're talking about The Walking Dead.
No, there was that episode or two where they were in the school.
I know.
Just
being funny.
Like the gangsters are coming after him or whatever they were. It's been
a while. That was two seasons ago. That was with the blonde guy. That was amazing as a villain.
That was a season afterwards. You're thinking season three. He's on season four. Season five was Michael Rappaport.
Right. I thought the blonde guy was before him. Well, whatever. We're getting off track here.
My number three is one I actually started watching again. I didn't finish it, but I started watching it about a week ago, and I... like instantly was like, man, I need to sit down and watch this whole thing because this movie is so good. And that's The French Connection. Gene Hackman and Roy Scheider and Fernando Rey.
I haven't seen that in a while. That's a
Gene Hackman is great as the alcoholic pervert, tough guy cop in the worst time in
Popeye.
New York.
Yeah.
Yeah. Worst. And actually the thing is the guy, he plays Popeye Doyle, who was a real cop, and Popeye Doyle's in the movie as his boss for like 1 minute, but it's still, yeah, the opening scene where he's dressed as Santa and Roy Scheider's chasing a guy down the street. And you see Gene Hackman dressed as Santa chasing this guy through, like, a dirty lot and doing the whole thing. Like, he's like, you pick your feet in Poughkeepsie. And the guy's like, what are you talking about? He's like, you picked your feet in Poughkeepsie, didn't you? You stole the money, you did a thing, and you picked. And he's the guy's just, like, completely like, I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, sure, I did it. Whatever, I don't know. Just leave me alone. I was like, I got to watch this movie again because this movie is so tough. You've never seen The French Connection. Oh,
no.
We are going to...
I would totally do that.
We're doing that one. We're doing that movie. Get ready for that.
I actually picked all detective movies and all kind of same genre. But it's Farewell, My Lovely, which is Robert Mitchum, and it's the update on the Philip Marlowe character.
I want to see that.
It's very good. It's in color, but it's like based on the Raymond Chandler and...
I want to see that for two reasons, though.
He made a few of them.
A, because of that, but B, also Ed Brubaker's uncle wrote the screenplay for that.
Nice. I would totally rewatch that if you wanted to.
I will totally watch that movie.
I think I recorded off like Turner Classic Movies, you know, when they would sometimes run like, you know, old noir detective stuff.
Right, yeah.
That one's really good.
My number two might not be for everybody, but if, you know, I don't know, I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I think it falls straight into this, would be the first Sin City movie.
Well, that one's kind of told from, like, multiple perspectives, but yeah, I mean, I guess they all kind of do get told from the anti-hero character's perspective.
For the most part.
Sure.
Multiple anti-heroes.
I would only put the first one in that list, because
that's why I said the first
one. Oh, okay, because the second one was... I need to see it again, but I remember thinking it wasn't...
I still haven't even seen the second one.
I haven't either, yeah.
I remember thinking it was good, but it definitely could have been better.
I just heard bad stuff about it, and I'm like,
I did see it at 9:45 in the morning. Maybe I was tired, but it wasn't really that great.
You? Tired?
I know. My number two is what I still contend is the best television series of all time, and that's The Shield.
I knew you were going there.
Right, it's not my number one because I think my number one is going to blow some minds, but The Shield is, I still think, the best show.
My number one is the best, but we'll
find out. But yeah, I'm a huge fan of the Vic Mackey, Shane Vendrell dynamic of bad cop and worst cop.
Strike team.
The strike team is the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. Depending if you're watching or getting beat up on him, I guess would determine whether you felt that way or not.
Right, right.
I got to go with the classic Big Sleep.
Another one I have not seen.
I mean, I'm a huge Bogart fan. And the movie, like, Bogart's just smooth. And the book, I think, was way better. But it just, they had to cut a lot of stuff, I think, just for the time period out of the movie. It was a little more risque. But I love that one. It's same thing, you know, private detective. You know, you get the case, and then people are, you know, always trying to outbuy you. And, oh, well, okay. What's your price? Philip Marlowe. Like, oh, I'll buy you out. No, I'm not for sale. See?
See? It just works better with that voice.
But that one's great. If you've never seen that, Scott, I mean, I'm pretty sure I own it somewhere. But
I'm pretty sure I'd watch it.
Yeah. Yeah, down the road, man.
So, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure these guys have number ones as well, but like once you guys hear mine, you're not going to top it. So we'll just finish it with this. The absolute one you have to watch is The Files of Police Squad.
Oh,
Leslie Nielsen.
That was the precursor to the Naked Gun movies. Sure.
And that's my number one as well.
Really?
Dude, as soon as you put that list in Police Squad.
I saw all I kept thinking of while we were watching this movie was like, oh, that's been done in Police Squad. That was done in the Naked Gun 2.5. That happened in Naked Gun 33 and a third. This movie was the Naked Gun without Leslie Nielsen.
I had a feeling that you were going that route, which is why I didn't let you go first this time.
But it's totally like, it is the best spoof of Pulp Fiction and crime noir of all time.
That's not a spoof. That's real, son.
Lieutenant Frank Drebin.
Police Squad.
I was just talking about this with somebody at work last week. One of my favorite scenes ever was the second movie when he's being introduced to Dr. Meinheimer. He just goes, don't get up.
Like, solitaire is a lonely man's game, Habsburg.
I like those movies so much that I'm like, George Kennedy, which is awesome, and he just happens to be in it. So I like had to watch every movie George Kennedy was in, and he was in like 500 in the 70s.
Nice.
Oh, my God. But, yeah, that was going to be my number one, too. So
that's a good pick.
Swish.
I got to go Maltese Falcon.
Another classic.
More Bogart.
That I never seen.
I think we did watch that one. We did watch that one.
More Bogart, and it's, you know, obviously classic PI work, and then it's similar in the Falcon, but I mean, you know what it is. You know what I mean? It's just,
right,
you know, Golden Bird, and it's worth, you know,
Maltese.
Right. It's just worth, you know, whatever. Back then it was probably worth like
$10,000,
and they were like, it's priceless, you know, because like a new car costs like $500. But that one is because it's the object, and it's, which is cool. But you know what that one is, and then,
right?
Yeah, Kiss Me Deadly. You don't really know what the object is till toward the end, but
correct.
Same thing, pretty much.
All right, actually, it's pretty solid across the board there.
So, like we said, unless we decide to change our minds and do one for Friday, we will be off.
No, I think we'll be off.
But
we deserve a holiday, goddammit.
Yeah.
America.
America.
I gotta go stand in line for some toasters. They're like $5.
That was probably, like, as far as memes go, that was probably one of my, like, it made me laugh more than most, was just a screen capture of, like, a text message, and the question was, hey, man, are you free? And they just sent back a picture of an eagle with the American flag behind it. Damn right, I'm free. It's just hilarious. But, anywho, that's going to wrap us up. You can find me on Twitter at XorcinX. You can find Brian at Pure Rock Fury. You can email Matt at sweatpantsfever@gmail.com. Go to comicrose.com to listen to all of our shows, past, present, and future. And patow, pating, patoom. See you later, see?
Wow.
You are now leading the world of Musings of a Geek podcast network. Stay geeky, my friends.